Welcome, everyone, to the final edition for the season of This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey. I am your substitute host tonight, Bill Berg, along with Michael Trzynski, Del Scanlon, and Bill Berg Jr. MJ Hobbit is lost in the Shire somewhere, and we hope to catch up with him by the senior class tournament. Got a few things to discuss today, and I think we'll just jump right into it. We will call them our Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine Games of the Week. As you know, the most important games of the past week were the state championship games and the boys and the girls side for Madison. Sponsored by the Mayo Clinic Sports Medicine, they provide cutting-edge, personalized sports performance and injury prevention programs, training with world-class experts and state-of-the-art facilities and technology. And we will start with the early game on Saturday, kicking off or puck dropping sometime about 10 after 12. And we will turn to our official Wisconsin Prep Hockey girls correspondent, Dell. Tell us about the championship game.
Thanks, Burglar. Well, it was a game that both teams were trying to put the puck in the net the first two periods, but neither one could get there. And you were really getting the feeling that this could be a 1-0 final. And Bay Area, 5:28 into the third period, ended up taking that one-goal lead as Talia Boys scored with an assist from Abby Anderson and Autumn Klimczyk. That score held up until there was a minute 12 remaining in the game, and the Storm tied it up with a unassisted goal by Amelia Edmondson. And once again, these two teams were tied at one at the end of regulation and went into overtime where Caitlin Ramthen scored a power play goal assisted by Maggie Plaza. And she made a beautiful pass that went through the skates of a Bay Area player and was one-timed in by K-Ram for the game winner. And it was just one of those nice tight games, which was how all the girls games were down there this weekend. The semifinals were both one goal games, and the championship games ends up being a one goal game. So what'd you think about the game, Trasher?
I thought it was a close one-goal game, and it seemed like you said, two periods, shots were 19-13 in favor of the Storm.
Yeah, and, yeah, they were.
Well, unofficially.
No, officially they were.
19-12.
Officially they were that. I mean,
yeah.
In reality, who knows what they were.
Right, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
But both goalies played well. Anna Holzbach, our Jesse Vetter Award winner, played very well. She ended up with 32 saves. And on the other end, Chloe Westberg had 14. Good defense. And as a matter of fact, we'll get to this a little bit later too, but Morgan Zirbel, who was the MVP of the tournament, the defenseman or defender for Bay Area, played a heck of a game, and I counted probably at least three plays in the second period, I believe it was, where she broke up a two-on-one. She tracked down somebody who had a step on her on a breakaway, and she did something else. She got her stick in the passing lane and broke up a cross-ice pass. And, I mean, well, she's an awesome defender and did a heck of a job to help keep the score at zero for quite a while there.
Yeah, you got that one play where she actually is on her belly in front of the goalie, stretched out, almost looks like she's doing snow angels on her belly, but stopping that puck from making it down onto Holzbach there, you know, and sacrificed her body quite a bit out there on the ice, blocking shots and doing what she could to protect her goalie.
Yeah, and it seemed like – oh, go ahead, Burglar.
Well, each team did a nice job of getting the puck to the net. I mean, the goaltenders played well, but it wasn't all just goaltenders. I mean, there were a lot of times when the puck was in the crease and the goaltender was down and out, and there were defensemen making saves and there were defensemen clearing pucks. Each team did a real good job of getting the puck to the net, but it was kind of a team effort on defense to keep those pucks out. And as well as Anna Holzbach played, you know, in net for Bay Area, the just kind of a fluke goal to tie it up. It was a high shot, and most goaltenders, you know, whether regardless of where the puck is shot, they dropped on into the butterfly right away. Well, she didn't. She stayed up, and the puck came in high, and she raised her shoulder and got the shoulder on the puck, but went up in the air and came down right behind her. And I don't know whether – we had a pretty good angle at it, but I don't know whether it had enough momentum to that it was going to roll into the net anyway. But then, you know, as she dropped down to try to find the puck, I think she ended up kicking it in herself. And everybody ended up in the back of the net, but just kind of a fluke goal like that. But some, you know, you keep throwing the puck at the net, eventually something's going to happen.
Well, what struck me when watching this game on the TV was just how high a percentage both teams' shots came from well outside what you'd consider a good scoring area. It seemed like either they were content to, or they were just unable to get inside. But they were content to throw the puck at the net and then crash and see what happens, and neither team was really allowing the offense to do anything once they did that. They were clearing the puck out, like you said, and it just struck me that there was a real lack of quality scoring chances on both sides because they were content to just throw the puck at the net and then crash and see what happens.
Well, that's been the Storm MO since, you know, before Pete Susans took it over. They don't try to set up pretty plays, although, you know, the overtime game winner was a pretty play. Normally, there has been, you know, throw the puck at the net and get, you know, three people down there at the net hammering away for rebounds. It's just the defense for Bay Area limited their opportunities, even, you know, for those second and third chances.
And the Bay Area penalty kill played very well through 56 minutes of action, and actually that overtime score was a power play goal for the Storm. They killed off 6 of 7 penalties, but they couldn't get the 7th one, and that ended up being the game winner. I know I was up on top on the end of the rink, and I was fairly close to some Bay Area fans, and they were grumbling quite a bit because they didn't think that penalty should be called in the OT. So, I don't know. I think if it's a penalty, you call it, whether it's in the first period or the third overtime, and referees apparently thought they were penalties. So,
well, when you reach out and trip the opposing player who is skating away with the puck, you know, you're going to get called usually. It doesn't matter when it is. There are some penalties where you have a gray area and you allow a little bit more leeway, perhaps in overtime, but obvious penalties, you have to call them regardless of when it is. You just can't let a team, you know, get away with anything just because it's overtime.
Right. I agree. And I did think it was a penalty. That was down along the boards on the left wing heading in, near probably the top of the circle or somewhere in that area. And yeah, I mean, definitely an impedance of progress. So you got to call it. Yeah. So, I mean, a close game, 2-1. I almost felt there for a while like the game was never going to end. Was looking at maybe a second overtime, but with just over 3 minutes or under 3 minutes left, I believe, with 2:55 left in the OT. That's not right. 2:38, I'm sorry. It was 17 seconds into the power play. We had a game winner, and that took us to the award ceremony and then the boys' championship game shortly after.
And what a game that was. Bill, why don't you start us off? You got to witness it on the TV, on the big screen.
I did get to witness it on the TV, and what I saw the most when watching it on TV is that every time I looked up, number 5 for Hudson had the puck. He was awesome. Chase Blackman would have been my tournament MVP if he didn't score a point, but he scored a bunch of them for the Raiders in this game. Not this game, but in the tournament.
And I think that's what you said when you were listening to the game with Hudson against Wausau West, was that Chad Holmes was saying Chase Blackman a lot. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Chase Blackman was there a lot. Another one that you saw handling the puck and making some nice moves and some defensive plays out there was Aaron Grounds. I seemed to see that number 23 quite a bit on the ice, moving the puck around, handling it, and trying to set plays up.
Well, we had talked on our Friday night podcast about, you know, Waukesha only throwing, you know, using primarily two lines, occasionally their third, and, you know, Hudson using everybody on their bench, and would it wear Waukesha down? And it didn't really seem to. I mean, shots were fairly even, you know, for both teams all game long. It didn't seem like Waukesha was wearing down at all. And the other thing that we talked about Friday night, it was either Friday night or Thursday night, I forget whether it was MJ or Trasher, kept saying that, you know, Hudson didn't seem to mind being shorthanded, seemed to have no problem, you know, killing penalties. And I think Bill pointed out during the championship game that the Waukesha goal, which came on a power play, was only the fourth power play goal Hudson has given up this year?
Yes, sir. 4 power play goals for the season.
I guess when you don't mind taking penalties if you're killing them off at that rate.
Yeah, not including the playoffs. I believe they had 8 shorthanded goals during the regular season, too. So,
so they outscored teams when they were shorthanded. We'll just play a 5-on-4 all game, and we'll still win.
Well, if you need to be good at something, penalty killing is probably a good thing to be good at.
And the game, the power play goal that Waukesha did score, beautiful play. Hudson was clearing the puck out of their zone. Ian Malcolmson for Waukesha intercepted right on the blue line. Faked one way, turned around, came back, walked down the boards, got around the hash marks, and just made a – looked up and saw Wyatt Wilderman streaking down the middle and just made a beautiful, hard pass that led Wilderman perfectly. All he had to do was put out his stick and get the proper angle on it, and that puck just deflected up and over Anthony Howard into the net. Just a beautiful goal that, you know, didn't really look like it came out of anything. But that was the other guy that really caught our attention on the boys' side was Ian Malcolmson, just the way he moved with the puck and the way he set up his teammates. Scored, I think, it may have only had one. I think he only had the one goal. Their fourth goal in the semifinal game, but just set guys up all tournament long. It was fun watching him work.
He's got to be the least selfish, I don't know if that's the right word, state leading scorer we've had in a long time. He is, just watching him play, he is perfectly content to set up his teammates. If he's in position to, you know, get the goal, he'll take it, but he is more than happy to set up his teammates. And despite having 79 points, his breakdown is 47 goals, 32 assists. For the regular season, that's pretty good. For the whole season combined, it's 48 goals, 39 assists. That's not much spread between the two, and that's a pretty unselfish hockey player.
Yes, he will move himself out of, you know, scoring position, you know, because he knows the other team is focusing on him. So he will move out of the score to draw guys to him, which gives him a chance to set up somebody else.
But I also did notice that it didn't take him long to get into position to take a shot, and he got off the shot very quickly, and usually it was right on goal, and there were a couple of times when I think the goaltenders were surprised that the shot came from 50 feet away from 2 inches off the left boards on the way down, you know, and it, right there, you know, and he, a very quick shot, very accurate shot. When he needed to put one on net, he had that one-timer, I think it was on Friday night, caught the pass in the slot. Well, he didn't catch it. He one-timed it, and that was a rocket. I mean, right on target in the perfect spot, just a great all-around player. And we talked about before, too, how unassuming and quiet and soft-spoken he is. I mean, it's kind of refreshing. You know, it's like he has no ego at all, just a great kid. And, you know, good for him for all the success he has had this year.
And he wasn't alone on that team. He had quite a supporting cast with him, the Wilderman brothers, Wyatt and Garrett. Garrett Larson's older brother, Chad Larson. They had some good players in that team. And Garrett Wilderman didn't notice it right away because, you know, he's 6 feet tall. But then you look into the thing. Well, actually, we heard it when he scored a goal and the Waukesha, you know, crowd was chanting, he's a freshman. He is going to be something in a couple of years. 6 foot is only like 155 or 165 pounds. But you imagine by the time he's a senior, probably looking at 6'2", 6'3", you know, closer to 190 or 200 pounds. He's going to be a beast with soft hands and a scoring touch.
And I believe it said in the book, this team only had 3 seniors on it.
Yeah, we mentioned that to, you know, one of the other team's coaches. Yeah, they only have 3 seniors, but one of them's the best player in the state. So,
well,
you know,
actually,
you're only losing 3 guys, but, you know,
yeah,
one of them is really big.
They're also losing their number 3 scorer, Wyatt Wilderman, who had 35 points in the coming into the tournament, and Ben Shepard, the defenseman that we saw, number 21, and he played pretty well. He made our all-tournament team, but he was just a little guy, 5'6", 178, but he wasn't afraid to mix it up. So, yeah, I mean, next year, the team is still going to be strong. Granted, they lose Malcolmson, but now maybe they're going to have somebody else pick up the slack a little bit, and we'll see how that works for them. I think they'll be back at the state tournament here maybe again next year if they keep playing like they've been playing.
And we usually take a while to wrap things up. We're trying to, you know, finish up the stories, put up all the pictures, tally all the all tournament votes and all that kind of stuff before we leave there. So we don't usually get out of there until, you know, at least a half hour after the award ceremony is done. This is the first time I remember seeing it, and, you know, somebody else saw it in previous years. You can go ahead and bring it up, but there were a handful of guys on the Hudson team that didn't want to leave the ice. I mean, they were skating around, they were sliding, they were giggling, they were just kind of prancing and dancing all around the ice for, you know, almost the whole time, you know, a good 20 minutes after everything was done and everybody was gone. I believe Chase Blackman was the last one off the ice. He and I think they were down to like 3 of them at that time. Kind of went to the center right around the face-off circle and knelt down. I think they were just, you know, soaking it in. It seemed like this game, this tournament championship, maybe meant more to those guys than it seemed to other players in the past. This wasn't just, you know, another high school hockey game. They they wanted to soak that all in and cherish the moment of winning that state championship as long as they could.
Well, I wrote about part of that in the MVP story. We'll get to that later, too. He actually, from what I saw, you're right, he was kneeling down at center ice, and it was like he was looking all around just to kind of take it in, like you said. And then the last thing he did is lean down, kiss the ice at center ice, and then skate it off. And it's like very emotional, very passionate about the game, cared about the game, just a great talent, you know. Him, Malcolmson, Aaron Grounds, those are superstar kind of players, and they make that tournament all that much more special for us.
Any other thoughts on that game, guys? If not, we shall move on to our Radisson-Madison Players of the Week. The Radisson of Madison, once again this year, was the official state tournament home of Wisconsin Prep Hockey because it is Madison's premier West Side hotel. We had a great weekend there. They served a great breakfast. I believe two of the teams, Wausau West Boys and the Bay Area Girls, were also there. And that was great, you know, first couple of days. Then on, you know, Friday night, a bunch of wrestlers from Holman moved in. And they got a little bit rowdy and stuff, but I guess they wasn't too bad. Anyway.
They were from Holman. How many could there really be?
Well, it was the team wrestling, so they brought their whole team. You know, if it was individual, they may have only had like one or two qualifiers, but they qualified for it was the team wrestling event that was going on this weekend. So they had all their I think they had all their parents there too. There seemed to be a lot of people there with Holman stuff on. Not Aquinas, not GET. Just Holman. No Avalanche gear. Anyway, who's going to do our Radisson-Madison Players of the Week? Bill, why don't you do that since you don't have any top... We didn't do a top 10.
Ooh, we didn't.
We should, but anyway.
Our boys Radisson-Madison Player of the Week, also known as the tournament MVP, is Chase Blackman of Hudson. Senior defenseman in the quarterfinal versus Eau Claire Memorial had two assists in their 4-0 win. He had an assist in the 4-1 win over Wausau West in the semifinals, and he had a goal in the championship game versus Waukesha. Chase Blackman is your boys Radisson-Madison Player of the Week, and we'll discuss him more in a minute. Your girls Radisson-Madison Player of the Week tournament MVP is Morgan Zerbel of Bay Area. Despite the fact that she did not score a point in their two games, she played such solid defense that half the voters named her as their tournament MVP, and I believe that she was first team on all of the ballots. So Morgan Zerbel, despite Bay Area coming in second, is the girls' tournament MVP, and it's not the first time that's happened for us, that the team that didn't win has the tournament MVP.
No, I mean, especially since, you know, the game went to overtime. You know, so each team was, you know, playing equally well. And, yes, she's very good. Even though she's not very big.
What struck me about Chase Blackman, and it's something every high school coach wants their players to do, when a defenseman goes around the net with a puck, your coach always wants you to make that first guy miss before you move the puck up to the wing. You want that guy to be behind you and out of the play. And Chase Blackman did that better than any defenseman I've seen in Madison in a long, long time. That first guy always missed, and if he didn't miss, Chase made him commit before he made that pass up the wing. And the same thing happened in the offensive zone on the blue line. If he had the puck out at the point and the guy was coming out to challenge him, he made that guy commit before he dumped it off. Rather than the guy comes out and you shoot the puck down the boards or you go across the other D, he always made that guy come all the way out and commit to take him out before he moved the puck on. And in a couple places, it was just stepping around that guy going in and either passing or shooting. But he has a level of patience and confidence that you don't see out of very many high school athletes. Sometimes you see guys who have a very misplaced sense of confidence. But no, his is real and it's deserved, and the level of patience that he shows when he's holding onto that puck is frankly astounding for a high school player.
Yeah, I'll go along with that. It seemed like he wanted the puck, which the good players do, but he didn't make too many mistakes. I mean, every player is going to make a mistake here and there, you know, maybe a bad pass or get the puck stripped away, but not too often. He made the right play at the right time, and he usually made a really good play. So you're right, Junior, definitely a cut above most of the defensemen that we see, and definitely a premier defender for sure. So he had a great tournament. And between him and Aaron Grounds and Anthony Howard, three pretty good players to build a team around. Plus, they had a very solid supporting cast. The Gornick boy that was a defenseman also played very well. George Newtonen, forward, lot of energy, lot of he had one goal where he scored, and then he ran over and jumped right in the camera's face that was doing the video for the telecast, and some people didn't really appreciate that too much, but I thought it was pretty funny. So
I liked it,
yeah.
watching from home. With
saw
the Gornicks,
coming right into your face.
Yeah,
huh?
with the Gornicks, you have to expect them to be good. Their name is on the arena.
Yeah.
That's always, you know, a point in your favor. If your name is on the arena, you're probably going to be decent at whatever sport you're playing.
Yep. The rink was named after their grandfather, John Gornick. So I'm trying to do a little research on that. That'll be one of my off-season projects, to get a little background on some of these rinks. I think that'll be little stories that people would probably be interested in. So we'll do some of that.
And it was one of the more impressive plays I saw out of Blackman was in the first period. He went around his net, went up, passed the puck off, and then I swear, not 3 seconds later, the puck came back to him clear on the other side of the ice. And I'm watching the telecast, and you know the camera had moved forward enough that it was off him for a second. It gets back down to number 5 on the near side of the ice on the telecast, and I'm like, how the hell did he get down there? He was just up on the other boards passing the puck up the wing. But it seemed like every time I looked at the TV, if Hudson was in possession of the puck, it was on his stick. And his stick has got stickum on it or something, because he did not fumble the puck maybe but once or twice the whole game. It was quite impressive. And Dell, do you want to tell us a little bit about Morgan Zirbel?
Well, you put Dell on the spot.
As soon as I had to get off mute here. Well, Morgan Zirbel, as Trasher mentioned earlier, I told Trasher at the end of the game, the championship game, I says, both games she played this weekend, she was the player on the ice that just jumped out at me. Her constant hustle was there, and it seemed every time I look down at the ice, I'm seeing the number 16 coming out. And I've gotten to see her, a couple different times during the regular season, but then I was more doing my article, not really paying attention to a lot of the stuff that was going on. And this weekend, it just really jumped out at me. And being able to talk to some of her opponents, down there at Madison, and, been over to the banquet and everything, it just comes across she's a very player that's respected by her opponents and her teammates and coach. And I think that, watching her out there, you can see why next year she's one of four seniors planning on attending UW-Eau Claire and playing hockey up in Eau Claire there for the Blue Goals.
Yeah, that won't be too bad of a team next year. Look what they did this year with their young freshman players like Aaron Connolly, the Bauer twins, I believe the Wittig girl from Bay Area played with them. Can't remember who all it was, but there was quite the Wisconsin connection, and they had a pretty awesome year this year, and they're going to be adding four great players next year, so the sky's the limit for that team.
Well, Holly Turnbull from Hayward was playing with them, and they actually fell in the what do you call that, the WIAC, the WIAC conference championship game in overtime yesterday, or on Saturday. But, I mean, they had a great year this year, and they're looking up. And since I mentioned that Morgan Zerbel's won, Emma Peterson from Superior, Jada Ward from Sun Prairie Cougars, and I believe they said it was Taylor True from the Central Wisconsin were all names that got mentioned as planning on UW Eau Claire next year.
I would definitely say the future bodes well for those guys. I thought Morgan Zerbel did a heck of a job out there too. And yeah, she didn't score any points, but if we look at the point leaders in the tournament, I think it was 3 points that led the tournament. And usually it's a few more than that. So if you read the article about what happened to the goal scorers, you kind of got a little bit of an idea of what they did, or in this case they didn't do, so maybe it wasn't such an odd thing that a pointless player was the MVP. She stood out to me too. Every time she was out there, every other shift, seems like sometimes more than every other shift, double shifted, she always was involved in some part of the play and did a whale of a job. And I know Bergler had seen her play several times in the past, and he could vouch that she's a very quick, very talented, very solid player, and I think well-deserving of the MVP.
All righty. I think we've pretty much covered that area, covered the games, covered the players. Anybody have any final thoughts on the 2016-2017 high school hockey season or the state tournament?
I think Bergler has one. But we, even though we won't announce the top 10, we will have that posted here tonight at some point. So check on either the website or on Facebook if you happen to be listening to this podcast. It'll probably be posted by the time you listen to it.
I still voted for the Hudson girls at number one, so.
It was a great state tournament. We have a fun time going down there every year. We have a nice location to watch the games from. People stop in and say hi, and they stroke Bergler's ego a little bit, and that makes him happy. It's nice to know that we are appreciated by the people that come to the website, and we're just trying to make it better every year. That's my final thought.
My final thought is, one, I'd like to say thank you to all the players and coaches this year for always making us feel welcome when we're able to make it to your games and cover them. But the other thank you I want to throw out there is to the fans and the players that joined us on Saturday morning as we presented the Wisconsin Prep Hockey Awards. We are extremely happy with the number of people that are able to come over there and watch these kids receive these awards at the end of the season. And once again, thanks for a great year.
Thank you to all the fine folks out there who clicked on our donate button and covered most of our expenses for going to the state tournament. We're going to go there anyway. But it's always nice when, you know, you don't have to pay for it yourself. That's been great. And it just, I know you, but if you listened to either of the games that we broadcast, we always want to make sure that if you're out there on the interwebs, you're going to be able to hear the games without having to pay a fee. The WIAA has an agreement with somebody to stream the games, audio and video, but you have to pay for that. And, you know, we look at, we try to find all the radio stations and such that are doing the games, and we put links to them. And there were two games that, you know, nobody was covering. You have your Madison area teams and your Milwaukee area teams that, you know, they don't have, they're not local home ground, hometown teams. So they don't have a, you know, a local radio station to cover them. So we did those games, MJ and I. And if you listened to any of those games, you heard us talk about the shot counts at the state tournament, which has always been interesting in the past, but this year was just, I don't think I'm overstating it to call it a joke. Two issues come to mind right away. One is that they have a scoreboard that enables you to count, to put the shot count up there as the game goes on. And as the game's going on, you can see the shot count going up seemingly randomly, but it will go up. And then at the end of a period, they will announce the saves that have no relationship at all to what was put up on the shot clock. It's like there's an official shot counter somewhere, and there's another shot counter near the scoreboard operator, and the two don't communicate until between periods. And then what they come up with doesn't seem to make sense to anybody. A perfect example would be the first period of the girls' game, the Sun Prairie, the Cap City Cougars and the Central Wisconsin Storm, or as we like to call them, the Sun Prairie Co-op and the DC Everest Co-op. But that's another story. It was a good first period, a lot of back and forth action, lots of shots up on the board. And at the end of the period, they announced the saves, assigning each goaltender to the wrong team. It was Chloe Westmark, or Westberg, who was announced as the Sun Prairie goaltender, and the Sun Prairie goaltender was announced as the DC Everest Co-op goaltender, and they announced the saves at 3 each. It had to be closer to 10 each. I mean, you know, if they come up with something like 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that area, but 3 each. I mean, come on. It was a joke. And it was like that the whole tournament. You know, get some people who know what a shot is. If you're doing the official stats, I mean, goaltenders are, I mean, all they have is their stats. They don't score any game-winning goals. They don't get a lot of, the only thing anybody notices them is when they're giving up a goal. You know, they have their stats. The Sun Prairie, the Cap City Cougars goalie, credited with 19 saves in that game. You know, she played a great game. She made a lot of nice saves, more than 19. The Central Wisconsin ended up with 11 saves in that. And it's like, I mean, give these goalies credit. Find somebody who knows what a shot is and who can count. They actually don't even have to be able to count. You get a pen and you put a little tick mark down. And you put little tick marks down, and then when it's all over, if you can't count, let somebody else count it for you. But put the right number up there, for crying out loud. Give these kids credit for what they're doing on the ice. I talked to a number of other people there that I know, and they all said the same thing. It wasn't even close to what was going on the ice. It was a travesty, and really, WIAA, you should be ashamed of yourselves for that. I don't say that very often, but for this, you should feel shame for the way you cheated goaltenders and cheated teams out of shots on goals and saves, because what you had down as the official stats was not even close, but was actually happening on the ice. There. That's my final thought.
Okay, well, I'll add to that. We had some timing issues. There was one game. Actually, I had misstated that there was a clock malfunction, but there wasn't. There was a scorekeeper or a timekeeper starting the clock malfunction.
You fell asleep again.
Something. And then this...
Yeah, and what game was that?
Yeah,
that was a game. That was a game.
That was
where Sun Prairie came back and Waukesha. Tied Waukesha.
Yeah,
and there was like 2.5 minutes left in the game when they had a face-off, and they didn't start the clock.
17 seconds, 2 minutes, 27 seconds.
2 minutes, 46 seconds was when they scored their goal that pulled them to within one, and when on the ensuing face-off, the clock did not start for quite a while, and then actually when they scored the goal with about 48 seconds remaining in the game according to the clock, then they went and adjusted the clock and took it down to 14 seconds.
Yeah, so they took 30-some seconds off the clock. I mean, imagine. I mean, Sun Prairie thought they had more time. I mean, imagine had they not scored, you know, if play kept on going and they'd scored at like with when the clock was actually down to 15 seconds, and then they have a discussion, oh, no, sorry, we started the clock 30-some seconds late. The game actually ended 15 seconds before you scored the goal. It doesn't count.
Yeah, that one was a little bit unexcusable for sure. It could have ended the game in regulation, like you said, instead of the 4-4 tie going to overtime where now it's anybody's game
They got very lucky that goal was scored with enough time left on the clock for them to run off their 32 seconds or whatever.
Right.
Apparently Bob was down taking pictures, and he said that the Waukesha coaches were just screaming at him to start the clock, and nobody was paying attention.
Hmm. You know, when I was like 14 or 15, I operated the clock once in Anago for like a squirt game. I managed to start the clock every time the puck dropped and stop the clock every time the whistle blew. I mean, it really wasn't that hard.
I mean, there are times when you get involved in the game. If you're a parent, I can understand that. I mean, I've had it happen where I probably didn't start the clock up for 3 or 5 seconds, and you hear people yelling, and, oh, crap, I better start the clock. But these guys have been doing this for a long time.
Too long.
We'll go there later. But and this is a state tournament. There shouldn't be these mistakes. If the clock screws up like it did that one year, that's nobody's fault. I mean, not really, but it needs to get fixed. But that's not the scorekeeper's fault or the timekeeper's fault. This definitely was their fault. And also there were some timing or goal scored times that were off by like a minute or like 10 seconds. I mean, like you said, been doing it too long, shouldn't make these mistakes. Just too many things went wrong, and I don't know if it's become old hat to these guys and it's more like we're just the old fellows club just meeting here, and you know, the game is secondary. Well, if that's the case, let's get somebody new down there. I've done scorekeeping, I've done timekeeping. I would be more than happy to go down there and do an accurate job. And I'm sure there's others that would do it. And I don't know who's in charge, if it's WIAA. I looked in the book, and it said something to the effect of John Spencer is the tournament personnel supervisor. So maybe we talk to John Spencer and see what we can do. Because, yeah, it was kind of a travesty this year. I talked to a lot of people, and almost everyone – to a person said, yeah, did you hear those saves? Or did you see that screw up that they had? And it's like referees, if you notice them, they're probably doing something wrong.
Yes, WA. We here at Wisconsin Prep Hockey, we didn't build this application, but sports engine that we use for doing our stats, yes, we would be more than happy to take over the official stat role for you. We will do it right. We will have people that can actually see the nets and count shots, and we will put them up on the scoreboard as they happen. And at the end of the period, the numbers will match. We'll actually give them to the proper goaltender. We'd be more than happy to take over the official scoring for you. Think about it.
But
we'll get
it
right.
I'm not going to wear a suit and tie, but I'll get the numbers right.
I look good in a suit and tie.
I'm going to have my backwards hat on, and I'm going to be down there, but we'll get it right.
Well, it'll probably be a bow tie.
Okay.
I like bow ties.
I could wear a bow tie. All right.
Anything else? Yeah,
we'll get a Don Cherry jacket for MJ to wear.
Yeah, if any of our listeners would like to donate, Coach BJ Brandt of Wausau West would like a trophy for winning our Baldest Coach Award.
Oh, he wanted to mention that when he was out there for the game, that baldness was, I mean, he only had, I think they said it was like 2.5 hours of growth on there. So he did it right before they took the ice.
Freshly shaven baldness.
Freshly shaven and shiny.
Must have used a little stick wax on it.
All right, anything else, guys?
I think that's
anybody,
it.
Anybody going down for the senior class tournament down in Waupun, look for us. We'll be there, probably in the tent, but occasionally out watching the game, taking pictures, but usually in the tent.
Yeah, but we always score the games and take pictures and cover the tournament for people that can't get there. And then
go to the tent.
Well, yeah, think of how – even if you weren't having an adult beverage, which we don't always do, how much fun it is just talking to the coaches and the people that we don't get a chance to see that much. I mean, JP Capo from De Pere, one of the funniest guys I've ever met in my life, just a blast to talk to out in the tent. You know, and we always run into people like Tim Ebner and people like that. It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, there's players or people that come down there that their kids aren't even playing just to come down and check it all out. So senior class tournament, March 24th through the 26th in Waupun, Wisconsin. Games start Friday night, run all day Saturday, and then there's 7th, 5th, 3rd, and championship game on Sunday. So if you get a chance, come on down to Waupun Community Center.
And while you guys are down at that, I'm going to try to head on up to Chippewa Falls that weekend to see the Junior-Senior Festival for the girls' side. And so we can give them a little bit of
Do they have a beer tent?
Out of that one. I don't know. It's going to be the first time I made it to it.
I assume Leinenkugel's should have some kind of tent if you're in Chippewa Falls.
Oh, I might have to go to Chippewa Falls.
I don't think they can because there's juniors there.
What difference does that make?
I don't know.
Seniors are not drinking age either.
Well, no, but I mean,
most of them have like baseball seasons and stuff coming up.
It's still not a WIAA event. You know.
True. I think at one point, right. Okay, never mind. Go on.
It's not like the players are out. Well, I mean, they are out in the tent, but
yeah,
that's where they
drinking
get their food,
water, or soda.
Yeah. We should probably wrap up.
All right, let's wrap up.
All right, thank you again for a wonderful season. Thank you for staying with us. It always surprises me when somebody says, "I heard what you guys said on the podcast," and say, "Why would you listen to this?" But apparently, people do. And they like it, and we like doing it. And keep those cards and letters coming. And if you have any hate mail, as always, trasher@wisconsinpreppockey.net. His inbox overfloweth. But until next season, when hopefully MJ will be back with us, for Bill Jr., Del Scanlon, and Michael Trzynski, this is Bill Berg saying good night and thank you for listening to This Week in Wisconsin Prep Hockey.